It's time to think big with Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and No Good Lying 3 or 2 Tall Alaska Tales. It's the Big Alaska Show. Broadcasting from the studios of a remote cabin outside Bolchitna and streamed worldwide at KFQD.com with podcasts streamed at BigAlaskaShow.com. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Stevenson, Big Alaska Show friends. May the 4th be with you as we feature Melanie Dufour and her friends with the Kachemak Bay Shorebird Festival. Neil Hagland with the Beard and Mustache Competition Update. Stapleton talks a big event happening with the Alaska Moving Image Preservation Association. And we have a Tall Alaska Tale designed to raise your spirits, not your blood pressure, unless you're a guy named Mike Ford. Good morning, everyone. It's the Big Alaska Show.
And good morning, and thank you for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve, along with my good buddy co-host Mike Ford. Our theme is May the 4th Be With You, because it's May and everything is happening. Hence the name Land of Extremes. In fact, we have a packed show of everything you could possibly stick in a short hour show. We've got festival coordinator Melanie Dufour with the Kachemak Bay Shorebird Festival in Homer, and she's back to tell us about it. And we have Rob Stapleton with AMIPA, that's Alaska Moving Image Preservation Association, to talk about a very important and interesting service that preserves visually Alaska's history. And they have an event coming up that Rob hooked up with our Eric Price to cover it. Then we have Mike Ford covers Mr. Furface, the mustache beard competition with Neil Hagland, which leads us into a Tall Alaska Tale. There's more, but we're out of time, baby. But of course, we would be remiss if we didn't start the Big Alaska Show out the right way.
You don't even know which one this is.
Do I don't even know which one this is.
It's timely. It'll be timely.
Anyway, time to have some. He drank some of it.
I know it. It's tough.
Folks, the key to a successful radio show, especially an early Saturday morning radio show, is a strong cup of coffee. And there's nothing stronger than Mike Ford's Big Alaska Show blend, the intense early morning coffee for intense early morning indigestion. That's why Big Alaska Show blend is the preferred coffee for experienced Alaskan birders. Alaska's long days mean birders have to get up early, because Alaskan birds get up even earlier. And if there's one thing 4 decades broadcast experience has taught Mike Ford, it's how to brew the most caustic, caffeinated, power-packed cup of joe. A blend so powerful, just one sip, and birders can quickly identify the shorebirds in Homer. All 22 million, and migrate south with them. Bitter biting with a specific gravity of basalt, Big Alaska Show blend, the intense early morning coffee for intense early morning gas.
Pour me a cup.
And that's how we roll here at the Big Alaska Show. But stick around, we have more Big Alaska Show coming up. And you can hear our show streamed and get podcasts at BigAlaskaShow.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. It's Kachemak Bay Shorebird Festival time again, and we love hearing from our friends who are throwing the party. So thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. Uncle Steve here along with my good buddy and co-host Mike Ford. It's Kachemak Bay Shorebird Festival season. Our little feathered friends are coming into the state, and who better to talk about it than our good friends in Homer, the Kachemak Bay Shorebird Festival coordinator, Melanie Dufour, visitor center manager, Laura Heller, and keynote speaker and author who's coming to Alaska, Ted Floyd. Would you please give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Melanie, Laura, and Ted. Melanie, let's start with you. Why don't you tell us when the Kachemak Bay Shorebird Festival is happening?
It is happening May 8th through 12th this year of 2024 in Homer, Alaska, on the shoreline and lands of Kachemak Bay.
Talk to us about what the Kachemak Bay Shorebird Festival is.
It's 5 days that will educate and recognize birds and nature. Just kind of, I think that we all know how amazing the nature of Alaska is, and this is the place and time to really delve into that and learn more and explore more and get outside while the weather's good. It's going to be good, and we can do things outside with friends and family, and we have opportunities for all ages and all abilities, so it's really inclusive.
This is a major birding event in the birding universe.
It is. It's a good one. People will finish up their life list. They'll check off things they've never thought they'd see.
What's the population of Homer about?
Total between Homer and the whole area.
It's about 5,000.
Yeah. Homer itself is smaller than.
Why don't we bring you into this too, Laura, because, I mean, you're the visitor center manager, and Melanie called you a co-sponsor. So talk about your relationship to this event.
Yeah, so I work for Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And we have a large visitor center here telling the story of the refuge. But a big part of our job at the refuge is also birds. And so the refuge and the Shorebird Festival are kind of entangled to help put on this every year. And we're kind of the host site for a lot of the different activities and talks. And a lot of activities leave from the visitor center as well. So Mud Bay and Kachemak Bay is a great area for all the shorebirds coming through.
Yeah. How big an impact is this for the visitor center?
It's huge. It kind of kicks off the season for the year. Our kind of busy season starts usually Memorial Day. So this is a couple of weeks ahead of time and gets us up and going. We usually have a couple thousand people in those 5 days, which this early in the season is pretty busy for this time of year. So right. It really kicks off the season for us.
Well, that's awesome. Incidentally, for people who want to come to this thing, is everything booked up already?
There still is space in many of the tours. You just kind of have to dig through to find the ones. And I will have to say that even though they have different, it's like, oh, there's no room on that one. But if there's room on that one, it's just as good. They're different operators, but you're still on the same water, seeing the same birds, having the same kind of great opportunity. And there's still room in Ted's talk.
Sorry, I should divide this up in two things, because there's signing up for things that are going on with the Shorebird Festival, and then there's actually accommodations in Homer. And I was going to ask you on that, Laura, we've just gone through the biggest snowfall I can ever remember. And folks, we've had it. We're getting out. So as far as accommodations, how is it looking so far, Laura? Because I know it'll fill up.
I honestly don't know, since it's all through the private sector, but I would imagine through all the hotels, Airbnbs and motels and all the different accommodations that are here, there's probably still space, but people would need to look into it pretty quickly to make sure they have a space.
So basically, yeah. It's showtime, folks, is what she's saying. Yeah. So Melanie, just list off a few of the events that are happening, and then I want to bring in Ted Floyd into this, because he is keynote speaker and is going to play a major role in this event. But what are some of the things that are going on at a Shorebird Festival?
There are many different educational workshops and fun workshops, felting, and there's kayaking, there's hiking, there's bird viewing, things on land and on water that are fun and educational. There's programs for junior birders from age 3 on up. Then we have teen birders as well, who explore and volunteer and lead as they've been an birder since they were little, and then they graduate from the junior birders and become a teen birder. So there's opportunities just for them this year. There's a trivia night for the teens. They like that. It's cool to be, that's one plus that I really saw. I just started right when the pandemic started. And one of the things I saw was middle school boys like, look what I saw. And they found cool birds because they had the opportunity. They had to go outside and they had to do that. And it opened their eyes to what's right around them. And Gertie the Crow is going to be back down here from the Bird TLC again. And she's always an all-time favorite.
What better intro than you, Ted Floyd, the keynote speaker. And here you are, an author out of Colorado, sir.
I live in Colorado. Actually, a greetings right now from the Mojave Desert. I'm down in the far southwestern Utah. Now I've been hearing y'all's reports of the big snow. It's sunny and 90 down here with the Roadrunners, but looking forward to getting up north as well. But yes, to answer your question directly, I live in Colorado, near Denver.
Welcome to the Big Alaska Show. And it's so cool that this is the first time any of you've really met. The keynote speaker, can you give us a hint of some of the things you're going to cover?
Sure. So don't want to give away all the my game here, but we're going to be looking at current and even future trends in bird watching and nature study. So I think many of us are aware that the events in the world around us are fast and pacing, and it's really that way with the ways that we humans are engaging birds in nature now. I think that we did a lot of things sort of the same old for more than 100 years, actually. But in the past 15 years in particular, we've really adopted a brand new way of engaging birds in nature. I'm getting at technology, of course, and the technology is something new that we're learning about, but the technology is also changing and affecting us too. I think we're engaging birds in nature in new ways because of new technology.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Our science guy is 78, and he's really become really good at drones.
And it's funny, you said 78 years old, and I'll just make a comment here that technology for birding and nature study isn't just for kids. It's really for everybody. Whether you've been bird watching for 7 weeks or 78 years, I think really the way that we do it is changing. So it's really an across-the-board change.
You know, I was reading a little bit about your background, and you're a world-renowned birder. Did you grow up birding?
Yeah, I started young. I was dabbling in bird study by the time I was 12, and I was full-on hooked on birding by the time I was 13. So I've been now I can say I've been birding and you know, observing nature for pretty much all my life.
You know, Melanie and Laura, I was just thinking, you know, he was talking about how technology has changed so much. And as many years you've been doing it, Ted, what new things have you learned? You strike me as a good student for life.
Well, I do try to learn new things every day, especially about sort of the most seemingly common and ordinary of birds. If you sort of go out and just look at a flock of house sparrows, or I should use some examples from home, right, or the black oyster catchers on the beach, or the short-billed gulls or something, there's always just something new to learn out there. I do find that technology, in my case and in the cases of so many other people, really is helping us learn things. We can go back and review digital photographs by the hundreds or by the thousands. We can listen to high-quality audio recordings that we make with our cell phones. We can share information with bird watchers, amateur and professional ornithologists all over the planet. So we're more connected, and I just think we have sort of more tools at our disposal.
You are an author. I read for 5 books, and this one I was looking at, the one I'm really interested in, is it seems to speak to me. You know, I'm your rookie, pal. You talked about the different birders. How about the converter birder?
There is such a person, and I like to say that we all retain that spirit throughout our birding careers. I think if birding ever gets, and by I say birding, nature study in general, too, and this could be astronomy or butterflies or what have you, but if it ever gets old or stale, I have to say you're sort of doing something wrong. There's really just something marvelous to see in the most common birds, butterflies, night skies, sunsets, sunrises, rainbows. I mean, there's just so much out there, and it's always new and surprising.
Tell us about your book, How to Know the Birds.
Oh, yeah. So that book came out now. I think it's been about 6 years now. I should know something like that. But it came out right before the pandemic. It is a book that, in fact, sets out to learn about birds. I think there are 200 little stories in there, little sort of vignettes, each one about a different bird species. And the idea is just to sort of I don't say teach, but, you know, inspire something new with every single little story in there. So it's just sort of the 200, probably the most common birds in the United States and Canada. And each bird is sort of selected in a way to, as I said, I hope inspire, maybe even educate or influence. And there is a bit of a, like, I guess, a trajectory or a narrative in there. It starts pretty basic and simple. And by the end, it gets into some, you know, more philosophical matters as well. But I would like to say that I think somebody with relatively little exposure to and sort of engagement of birds could pick it up, start reading, and maybe know something by the end of it.
You talk about low-lying fruit. I'm your man. But I thought it was interesting, the little I did read about it, it did talk about holistic birding. Mm.
Yeah, so that's funny. That may have been something marketing came up with. I'm not sure that those were my words. I know exactly what they're talking about, though. Yeah, so I think there can sometimes be a tendency with nature study, and this might be sort of more of a throwback to the 20th century, to be what reductionistic, you know, sort of to break things down into the component parts, the feathers, the eyes, the legs, and to just sort of take birds, you know, sort of one item or component at a time. And that has some value to it, but I think that sort of looking at the whole bird, so that's that word holistic there, the bird in its environment, the bird in context, how the bird interacts with other birds, with other organisms in nature, with the entire ecosystem, and very importantly, with humans as well. I think, you know, the whole bird-human nexus is in there as well. So don't get me wrong, I love feathers and parts of birds, and we can get into the technical details of physiology and anatomy, but yeah, when you really sort of take it to a more, again, if you will, holistic, ecological level, putting the bird in its environment, putting it in its context, I think that the experience is a richer for us.
Melanie or Laura, do you have any questions for Ted?
I'm excited to hear him talk from his magazine and other books. It'll be exciting to have him here and learn about all his experiences and stories.
I would like to know, Ted, if there is a bird that you have not seen before that you hope to see in Alaska.
So, well, I have two answers to that question. There is one, actually, and it's one that sort of Kachemak Bay is famous for. I've been talking to Aaron Boone about it, Aaron Lang, about a bird called the long-billed merlet, which is very, very rare. In fact, there haven't been any sightings in the United States and Canada at all in several years now. But when they were showing up, they tended to show up in Kachemak Bay, actually. That was like the best place to see them, like anywhere in the Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And Aaron said that my chances of seeing one are slight, but it sounds like you guys will have me on a boat on Wednesday morning, apparently with somebody who really knows what he's doing as well. So Aaron said that if I have a chance, if anybody has a chance of seeing a long-billed merlet in the Western Hemisphere this year, it's probably going to be us on that boat on Wednesday morning. But it still sounds like I have about a 1 in 50.
I think it's still a slight chance.
That's going to be an amazing trip.
So it's a bird I've seen a lot of. In fact, I saw them earlier today, but it's actually a really special bird for me because I learned about it even before I was a bird watcher. I got 8 years old in a diorama at the Carnegie Museum of Natural History in Pittsburgh. And it's from Homer, actually. And it's, it's sort of like an idealized Homer, but it's the Homer area. And it's a marine intertidal diorama. So there are, you know, starfishes and other things there and gulls and, you know, scenery in the background. But the sort of pièce de résistance are these oyster catchers, black oyster catchers. And I've seen plenty of black oyster catchers, but like I've known about this exhibit for like almost 50 years now. And like, I've always that really got me fired up about oyster catchers. When I was just like a little boy, you know, first grader or something like that. So I've seen plenty of oyster catchers, but seeing one in Alaska, in Homer is going to be like sort of this, like, you know, journey back home or something like that.
Come to the fountain of youth.
Yeah.
For people who want to find out more information, and also can they find out information when Ted is talking?
Yes, the whole schedule is on our website if you don't have a card copy. Kachemakshorebird.org is our website, and there is the full, there's a PDF of the program that you can download and you can print out if you don't have a paper copy already. You can look on the registration. It indicates everything. Ted's talk is Saturday evening at the Homer High School, and we will have his book, one of his books there for sale. And at the Homer Bookstore, they will also have his book for sale.
Laura, just a thing for you, you being with the visitor center there, anything that while people are there, it'd be cool to check out some of the things. I mean, this is a cool little spot when I came into it.
Yes, we'll have lots of different talks going on Friday, Saturday, and even Sunday morning. So if you want to learn about IDing shorebirds, we have a class for that. If you want to learn about migration or foggy origins and rats and invasive species, we have talks for that. We have all kinds of different talks going on, and a lot of those are free. So you just have to register for the Shorebird Festival, and you can sign up for a lot of those talks just to make sure that you have a seat, because a lot of those are filling up. But yeah, a lot of different activities are happening, including Discovery Lab on Saturday. We have one for adults in the morning, and then one for kids and families as well. You can learn all about birds and birding and ask all kinds of great questions.
This is terrific. And for us here at the Big Alaska Show, as me and Mike Ford say, it's more fun to go to someone else's party. So what a wonderful event from a guy who went from having a loud mouth and learning a lot from the birding community. It's opened up the world for my wife and me. We love the cacophony of birds. We love this, the surrounding men. We've got a little feeder out there, and every time it gets low, they've gotten real spoiled. They just stare at me until I go out and, you know, do my duty. But it's really opened up the world for us, and it's made us appreciate Alaska that much more. So to our good friends at the Kachemak Bay Shorebird Festival, let's give a warm Big Alaska Show thank you and continued success to Melanie, Laura, and Ted. For more information, visit KachemakShorebird.org.
This is Mike Ford.
And I'm Uncle Steve, inviting you to join us for the Big Alaska Show Saturday mornings.
It's Big Alaska guests, adventures, and no good lying through your two tall Alaska tails.
And we're designed to raise your spirits, not your blood pressure. Just leave your muddy boots and politics at the door.
It's a great way to start your Saturday.
And we're locally owned, just like our sponsors, Neighbors Windows and Doors and Alaska Enterprise Solutions.
For broadcast, streaming, and podcast information, visit BigAlaskaShow.com. And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized sales agent for Xerox in Alaska. Call Mike Ferris or visit him anytime at aesalaska.com.
And thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve with co-host Mike Ford. Aviation and photography are passions of our next guest, Rob Stapleton, who joined Eric Price to talk about an event supporting both.
All right, I'm here with Rob Stapleton, an old friend of mine, the president of the AMIPA organization. It's a nonprofit in Anchorage, correct?
Yeah, 501c3.
And can you tell me a little bit about AMIPA and just kind of what the organization is about?
Sure. AMIPA, A-M-I-P-A, is the Alaska Moving Image Preservation Association. And basically, we take old moving film and tape and digitize it so that it can be used in the future. AMIPA itself is located in the library building over at UAA, the Consortium Library, at UAA and APU, and it's on the third floor.
So they have an archive over there?
We have an archive, and we have a large collection. We have over 20,000 different pieces in the collection, and some of the things that we've got are very old, early 1920s, and we've digitized some of that.
Is that all like one-inch film? And
1-inch, 35 millimeter.
Wow.
You know, 1-inch tape. Just about anything that moves that you could, you know, that might have been tape or film.
Right.
And yeah, we've got a really nice collection. We have all of the J. Hammonds, Alaska.
That's really cool.
Yeah. We're working up to trying to put an index online.
Right.
And that's something that's not happening right now.
Right.
But that's our goal. But if you have old historic film, like for example, I don't know if you remember the Reed family here in town. Okay, well, the senior Reed shot 16 millimeter film.
Right.
In you know the 30s, 40s, 50s. And we have some of that in the collection.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's really neat, you know.
I bet there's lots of aviation stuff in there.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm interested in. Yeah, but I'm interested in some of the other things too. Like, I think we've got a whole catalog of I think it's King Island, the King Island itself, and film that was shot in early days, and probably I think there was some shot actually in the early 1900s.
Wow.
And it was shot by a church priest who traveled around Alaska, and I'm not going to go into detail about that, but the point is we have these different collections of historic things around Alaska that we're looking for, and some that we've even found accidentally.
Yeah.
And we've digitized that.
I'm sure I'm interested in a lot of Alaska history stuff, but I also am really interested. I collect and look for a lot of old antiques and stuff, and it amazes me that there's so much uncovered stuff in Alaska, because even just in Anchorage, in my kind of search for old stuff over the course of however many years, I feel like I've seen it all. And then every 6 months I find a whole section of stuff that has just appeared that nobody's seen before. And I'm sure it's similar with film and photos and things in Alaska. I'm sure there's still lots of stuff out there that could be added to this archive, and that people may be sitting on that I've found, even in, you know, with antiques, people, this old thing, nobody finds it interesting. If that were to be the case, how do people contact AMIPA to say, hey, I've got this thing you might be interested in putting in the archive?
Well, AMIPA has a website online. It's amipa.org, and you can go there and get the phone number and see some of the collections. I think I sent you a link to that, and you can see the collections in there. But one thing I need to make really clear is we don't take everyone's film, home movies,
right,
and digitize the film for you. We're really looking for historic Alaskan events.
Right.
You know, if you've got an event that you shot in the 50s, yes. In the 60s, yes. In the 70s, yes. In the 80s, you know, yes. but if it's really interesting,
right,
you know, something maybe that you know is historic because maybe someone's told you it is, or,
right,
you know, don't ever think that people don't want to see it, because now everyone wants to see a lot online. So, you know, but we don't, we're not Costco. We're not, you know, Walmart. We don't take film in and digitize it.
Well, it costs money to do that stuff. And you guys got to raise the money somehow. So you got an event coming up at Beartooth. What date is that?
May 6th at 6 p.m.
And you guys are showing...
We're showing Only Angels Have Wings, which it's a fundraiser for AMIPA's endowment account. And the endowment account resides in the Alaska Community Foundation's one of their accounts.
And so the funds that are raised through AMIPA are then used to digitize the film, right?
Well, I think we have the endowment account, and we haven't put any guidelines on it. The board, we just got this endowment from Lil Morgan,
right?
And when she passed, she left us a sizable amount of money, and it just came to us, even though she's been gone for a couple of years. So we haven't totally organized exactly what we're going to do, but we know that we have this fund. And we want to add to it, but say maybe we need to hire somebody who's an expert that can tell us more about a specific film that we get,
sure,
or about digitization, or about bringing someone in that can help us do some indexing, or maybe even we need to take in a collection, and it's going to require a lot of funds for the digitization. For example,
right,
we've got the Lowell Thomas Jr. some of his film, and he was prolific shooting 16 millimeter, flying all over the state. He's got some beautiful stuff. So we have that, and you know, things like that might come up where we need to use that, some of that money. But at this point, we haven't actually designated what it'll be for. There's a poster online. It's on the website, on the AMIPA website. It's on Facebook. I put posters everywhere in town. And if I miss something, I doubt it. But, you know,
you're pretty thorough with this.
Well,
stuff.
I went back and checked to make sure people didn't pull them down, yeah. Even though I started putting them up in March.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're only now a few days away. So we've got a poster with a QR on it, and you can get your tickets online with the Beartooth Theater Pub.
So that is the Alaska Moving Image Preservation Association bringing up the... I guess it's called the Aviation Film Festival fundraiser, correct?
Well, it's an AMIPA fundraiser, but it's a film that includes, kind of parallels the life of Bob Reeve at Head Revolution Airways. It's, you know, it's about pilots flying in the late 1920s, early 30s in Central America, but Bob Reeve actually flew and had a speed record for delivering mail in South America in the late 1920s between Chile and Peru.
Wow.
So, and then he came to Alaska in the early 1930s. So, you know, the film is an old film. It's a 1938 or 39 film with, you know, some very famous actors.
So you can head to amipa.org. Or you can go to BeartoothTheater.net and get tickets. That's May 6th. $50 a ticket if you go to the Beartooth or you find any of those posters. Just scan that QR code and you get tickets available. We'll also have the poster available at BigAlaskaShow.org. We'll talk with Rob here in the coming weeks about the flyovers going on at Lake Hood and all kinds of other aviation stuff. But until then, appreciate you coming in, Rob, and hope to see a lot of people out at the event.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Well, we've talked about birds and pictures. How about beards? Mike Ford, Neil Hagland, and Mr. Furface.
Well, another exciting event, which usually happens during the Fur Rendezvous. But guess what? We get to have it in May this year. And that's the Lions Club Mr. Furface competition. And here to talk about it with us is Neil Hagland. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning there, Mike. Good to talk to you.
So we've moved it from Fur Rondi. Now it's in May this year. And not only is it at a different time, but the Sullivan Arena has been reopened to do fun things. And it's so big, it's at the Sullivan Arena next Saturday.
Yeah, yes, it is. On May 11th, from 5 to 11 p.m., the contest is between 7 and 9, which is consistent with what we've been doing over the past number of years with the Mr. Furface competition.
And I got to say, I'm excited to come down and be part of the fun. It's always amazing to see how long that hair gets on their faces and the different ways they style it. And maybe for those that are uninitiated to Mr. Furface, tell us how it all breaks down, the categories there are.
Well, there's and most of the categories are color coordinated. So brown bear would be a brown beard, black bear would be a black beard, honey bear would be a blonde beard. We have red fox, polar bear, polecat, which is black, brown, or red that has streaks of white in it. So those people that are 40 years old and got the white creeping in, that would be their category. And then we have a couple of categories that are styling. So we have the wolf category, which is the prettiest beard or the most suave beard. We have the mountain goat, which is a goatee, mustache and goatee. We have the ptarmigan, which is just for the birds. It's any kind of decoration that you want. So I've won that 10 years in a row with the different stylings that I had in it. And then the soup strainer is a mustache that is above the edges of your mouth.
Okay.
So we do have another one for those longer ones. It's called the walrus. That goes down the side of your mouth, under your chin, maybe. We also have a non-mustache category, and that's called the Alaskan Whaler. So it's just a beard with no mustache. And then for those that aren't brave enough to grow a beard, or for even those that have a different chromosome set than us, we have the Pyrite Pioneer, which is fake beard.
And those get pretty ornamentated as well, don't they? There's some amazing people in the competition for that one.
Oh, yeah. We've had people that have knitted a beard and knitted it so they fit over their ears. And then, then they decorate it after that. So, yes.
That's
so
awesome.
It's a fairly competitive, but it's a fun kind of competition.
Yeah,
so everybody's rooting for everybody else. The bigger categories where you have those guys, they have the beard down to their belt buckle. Those are usually in the brown, black, honey bear, and polar bear. But one year, it was a gentleman with a goatee, and his red fox goatee went all the way down to his belt buckle.
Wow.
And he was crowned Mr. Furface. So
nice.
You just never know.
All right.
Some short beards that have won. There's long beards that have won.
Wow. And this all goes to help the Lions Club. And tell us some of the stuff you guys got going on this year, Neil.
Well, last year, we have 17 different Lions Clubs in the surrounding area here, and they all put a different stamp on it. For the past number of years, my Lions Club, along with several other Lions Clubs here in the 49A district, that's Lions Clubs below the Alaska Range, we would put on the Miners and Trappers Ball. But from there, we have a sight vision that you'll see the sight vision trailer up at the fair. We used to do Trick or Treat Town, which would bring the kids in so they don't have to go out in the street over at the ACS garage. So there's a lot of different varied events there. You'll see Benton Bay will go to the UAA basketball games and the hockey games and do Split the Pot there and take that money and give it to different charities around the area. So Lions Club has been a big part of my life for the past 30 years, and this is just something we're going to continue on.
And there's always room for people to sign up with the Lions, too. How would they get a hold of somebody to do that, Neil?
Well, they can certainly call me, 720-883-1286. And what I try to do when I call to them, I said, so what's your interest? Because a lot of these Lions Clubs are interest-oriented. Benton Bay, of course, is UAA Sports. There was another club that was with the Aces. There's some racing clubs. So if you're a snow machine racer or a motorcycle racer, a dirt bike racer, there's clubs for that. And maybe you can't make a noon lunch, but you can make an evening lunch or maybe a breakfast lunch. We've had a number of people that have done breakfast lunches. So we try to fit the person to the club depending on their interest and when they're able to make a meeting. And it's not mandatory that you make every meeting. Kind of the philosophy that I've used for years is when somebody wants to do something at one of my events, I say, do what you can, when you can, and then do it well.
Okay.
So if you can come for 5 minutes and work your hind end off and give me your best effort, I'm happy with that.
All right. And you guys will be down there at the Mr. Furface at the Sullivan Arena, and they could find out more about Lions there too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, the reason that we switched this, we're trying to get the National Beard Contest up here. They've always done it in November. But nobody really cares to come up here in November because it's kind of cold and
yeah.
kind of snowy. So we thought we'd kind of go to the little bit before summer. That way, not everybody's out fishing yet. Not everybody's at their cabin yet because the ice is still on the lake. So see if we can do something like that and maybe encourage people to come up here in the late spring and not only to do a national beard contest, but also to see some of the early events, like going into the park. I know for myself, I like to go in the park in May or the first part of June because you can see the animals right alongside the road. There's no foliage yet. So
yeah.
It gives them an opportunity to see the bear cubs and the wolf cubs right beside the road.
Nice.
So there you go.
Well,
yep.
Very good. Well, we want to invite everybody, and they can just sign up there the day of the event, right, Neil?
They can. This is what this is. It's called the Beard Booze and Bacon Festival. Along with the beard, they're going to have the a championship best bacon recipe. We will have some food trucks in there. And also, they're going to have a mullet contest.
Oh!
So if you've been growing that mullet for 40 years, come on down and show us your best mullet, and you can be a championship mullet grower.
Nice!
Yep.
All right, so they need to be at the Sullivan Arena next Saturday, the 11th, and what time do they need to be down there?
The doors open at 5 o'clock. There's a single person out there, I think his name is Randy, and at 9 o'clock, Nervous Rex starts playing, and then in between those two sets, we will have the Mr. Furface competition sponsored by the Miners Grabbers Ball and the South Central Beard and Mustache Club.
All right. Neil Hagland, always fun to chat with you, and we look forward to being down there to see the best beards and mustaches Alaska has to offer.
Well, thank you, Mike. I sure appreciate it. And tell Uncle Steve hello.
Mr. Furface has quite the legacy. We did some research and tested the knowledge of some of the committee members from the Fur Rondi. After all, who would know better the facts?
I think it's time to play one of our fun games we call
Tall Alaskan Tales, Tall Alaskan Tales. No good lying through your tooth, Tall Alaskan Tales.
Okay, the way we play this, we're going to play a tale, and it's up to you to determine, is this a truth or a no good lying through your tooth, Tall Alaskan Tale? And Mike, once again, please tell them our
we're
disclaimer.
We're eligible to win our own prizes, we usually do.
Yeah, okay.
When Anchorage resident Vern Johnson organized the winter sports tournament in 1935, one can only imagine how delighted he would have been knowing it would turn into the ever-popular Fur Rendezvous of today. All Vern wanted was to bring Anchorage's small population together with a fun cabin fever reliever. In those days, fur trade was the second largest industry at the time, and it was common practice for fur traders to come sell their furs in February. So in 1937, they revised the name to the Winter Sports Tournament and Fur Rendezvous, then eventually just Fur Rendezvous. Over the years, many a colorful story has been told having to do with the Fur Rondi. One such story has to do with one of Fur Rondi's more popular events, the Mr. Furface competition at the Miners and Trappers Ball. Here, competitors would vie for bragging rights for the best beard and mustache. Prior to the event being introduced in 1950, a committee spent countless hours wee into the night defining the rules of the competition. It was no easy task. Beards and mustaches are as unique as the individual sporting them. As a result, several categories were developed, such as there was the Mr. Alaskan Whaler, Mr. Brown Bear, Mr. Black Bear, Mr. Mountain Goat, Mr. Polar Bear, Mr. Soup Strainer for the best mustache, and on and on. But there was one category discussed that would never see the light of day. The thought was, if awards were going to be given to the best beards and stashes, why not provide an overall award for the most body hair? After all, there are men walking around with thick jungles on their chests, backs, and no telling where else. Creative category names abound, such as Mr. Hairsuit and Mr. Yeti. However, things came to a halt when committee members discussed how the competitors would display their wares and its appropriateness, especially for those whose hairline seemed endless. Is this the truth or a no-good lying-through-your-tooth tall Alaska tale?
Okay, now, here we go. Now, so, Beth, ladies first, do you think this is the truth or a tall Alaska tale or a no-good lying-through-your-tooth tall Alaska tale?
I think it's the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, I have heard some really colorful Rondi stories that really don't make the press. I don't know where you guys got this information or where you dug it up, because they didn't have the competition, obviously, but we still have a Mr. Furface today. And the reason I think it's true is because of the fact that Keystone Cops, their original purpose was to be arresting people for not having a beard. So they took this body hair thing really seriously. I mean, it was a big point of the entire festival.
Wow.
They switched it over to arresting you for not having a pin, because that obviously broadened the audience, one would hope. But I'm guessing it's true, just because the whole the hair thing was a big deal. It's disgusting. But, you know, it just sounds like something that a Rondi committee would go into late into the night, especially if they've got some, you know, Jim Beam on the side. Things get creative. Things get wacky. I'm saying it's true.
Okay. Dennis, what do you think? Is it truth or no good lying through your tooth tall Alaska tale?
Oh, I'm going to buy it 100% because just knowing how some things work at some of these committee meetings. Yeah, I think it's true. But the one thing you missed was actually the reason that Ferrandi started was because Vern and his committee were trying to pull people from Fairbanks because they had the Winter Carnival locked down in the mid-30s, and people from Anchorage were taking the train to Fairbanks, and Vern came up with an idea how to bring people back to Anchorage and keep them in Anchorage, and they started with the basketball tournament and fur and miners and the trappers getting together and competing in boxing, and they actually had a dog weight pull at one time to see which dog could pull the most weight. So that's the real start of Rondi. But all of the hair thing, oh yeah, okay. Buying it.
Oh, I'd have to mirror the thing. Mirror it. I mean, hair was the way to be warm, whether you put it on your head or whether you grew it on your face. So I
wore it.
Or wore it. Absolutely. You know. I mean, this
we can't fool anybody.
Mike. I love the Yeti. I love that Mr. Yeti. Yeah, that's the.
So, Mike, do we have the answer for that?
We do. While this is obviously a bold-faced lie, one can't help but think the new category would be called Mr. Missing Link.
Hey, Mike, what sound effect do we have for us losers? I'm sorry, folks. That was a no good line.
I still think it probably came up in committee. It had to. I mean, if you guys could come up with it, then somebody else did. It just never made it.
We're taking it to the next level at our next board meeting.
Thanks for giving us a great idea, guys.
I see Mr. Unsightly back hair coming out next year. So, thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. One of the things we like to do is get our Big Alaska Show rootin' tootin' rotary update from our good friend and good citizen, Mike Ferris.
April is Environmental Month. Rotary has 7 areas of focus. They have 6 areas for a long time. One was, you know, promoting peace, fighting disease, providing clean water, sanitation, hygiene, you know, mother and children, education, and helping grow local economies. And several years ago, they put a 7th area of focus. That's the environment. And so April is Rotary Month for helping the environment. Always something going on. You know, Rotary, like everybody, wants to make sure we're protecting our environment. We live in a great place. And, you know, I think just protecting natural resources, especially up here in Alaska, we have it as good as anybody. I mean, just what a beautiful place to be. And so Rotary encourages, you know, embrace what's around you, take care of it, make your place a better place to live. You've heard me talk about, and you got a visit with Gordon McAnally last fall up here for Life on Land, our district 5010 in Alaska hosted. And part of that was how to be good stewards of our environment. Nobody does it better than Alaska. We need resources to live. We got to need solar panels, and people want wind and electronics, and all that comes out of the ground. You know, Alaska is a perfect place to do it because we love our state. We love where we live, and we want to keep it looking that way. And we got done with that presentation, and so many people said, and we didn't record it. We didn't make a copy, and everybody came
of course.
Said, you guys have a copy. I want to take this message back. And a lot of the people were up from the East Coast, and they just hear a different story. And they go, you guys are doing it right. I want to take that message back. And all we could do is tell, sorry, I hope you remember it. But, you know, just real quick, I think over the last 5 years, that's probably about how long the environmental has been an area of focus. Rotary spent close to $19 million in global grants, giving it to different clubs and districts that want to go make the world a better place, from protecting, restoring land, coastal, marine, freshwater resources, making, you know, their natural resources conservation better. One of the clubs down in Juneau, you know, was building a walkway. They were just tearing up the forest as people were walking out to a point, and they got a grant and went in there and, you know, fill it full of gravel and put bridges in just so people can go enjoy nature without tearing it up. Hundreds of these projects going around the world. You know, how do we make the environment, keep it nice, be able to use it? I've never been a proponent of these people that just want to lock up the environment and look at it. If we can't get out there and use it, why do we want to have it? It's beautiful. We just need to take care of it and be really, really good stewards while we're doing it. So April is in Environmental Month for Rotary. Do something for your environment. And I tell everybody, nobody does it better than we do in Alaska.
So that's our show. Mike Ford always says doing the show is the best way to start off a Saturday morning. I maintain it's the second. But I digress. You know, visiting friends on a Saturday morning with a cup of coffee and realizing you spend an hour around good people doing good things. May the 4th and beyond be with you. And to my baby girl, love you, and Mike Ford, why don't you take us out as you so eloquently do?
All right, Uncle Steve, we want to thank Melanie, Neil, and Rob for joining us. We want to thank you for listening, and we want to thank our sponsors, Neighbors Windows and Doors, Alaska's window experts at 6251 Tunnel, or visit online at neighborswindowsanddoors.com. And Alaska Enterprise Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent for Alaska, online at aesalaska.com. Remember, if it's Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good line through your tooth, all Alaska Tales, it's got to be the Big Alaska Show. Have a great week, everybody.